Well, hey, everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and we like taking occasionally themes here on the show, and this week is no exception. So you're going to hear a lot about work and leadership and schedules and life, and it all comes under what we like to call adulthood and growing up and getting just your bit knit together. So very important to us here. Later on in the show, Candace is here to answer a listener question about, it's a woman who's moving out, and she wants that balance between what does it mean for her to be independent, but also be willing to ask for help, and what should she negotiate in that process? So Candace has some good thoughts on that. And then for our culture segment, we're very privileged to have Brad Lominick. He's the president of Catalyst. Any of you who have gone to one of the Catalyst conferences or have subscribed to their podcast or follow all their leadership materials, he has a new book out called The Catalyst Leader, and he's going to be talking about that. And here we are for our roundtable, which hopefully won't become a big wah, 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 as we all just get depressed about our lives. But we're going to talk about work and how, like, our schedules, our work schedules and otherwise, have literally encroached on or have taken over our personal lives, and how we're striving to kind of figure out, how can I live a normal life apart from work, or is work owning me? And so we have three guests here. We have Perla, Amy, and Dax. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being part of this conversation. So they are all going to bring their work experiences to the table, very different experiences. And I know I kind of feel like I've fallen in this camp as well of struggling with how this looks. I think especially as when we talk about single young adults, it's like our social lives and what we do in ministry and service and in the church are very important to us, because we don't have, you know, we're not going home to families and having that necessary structure. So I think it's very easy for us to give little pieces of ourselves away. And are we doing that well? Are we stewarding our time, attention, energy well? And it's not that we're not supposed to work, because we work to the glory of God, people, you know, and that's important. But what does that look like? And it's funny because one of our listeners out there, in fact, I tried to get him on the show, but of course he had to work, so he couldn't do it. But I just got a message from him. Grant. Hey, Grant. Grant's out on the East Coast and is finishing up, I think, his residency, if that's what you call it, in anesthesiology. And basically he has no life whatsoever. So he just is in the OR and listens to the Boundless Show. So thank you for making us a priority, Grant. But he was like, I need to hear this. Please help me. Please help me. So you guys are going to bring some insight here. So I want to kick off the conversation by just saying, if you thought maybe 5 years ago, kind of where you were in life and where you were in your careers and stuff, is this kind of where you thought you would be today with your schedule and what you've had to wrestle with? Or has this kind of like gradually just seeped into who you are and it's just a necessary evil?
Well, I'll jump in. I will definitely say it has seeped into my life. I got promoted about 5 years ago exactly to a management position.
Those promotions are dangerous.
They are very dangerous. Beware. That means you are really signing over your life. But I had really not seen that it was going to take over as much as it really has. So I am not on this show because I have conquered this issue, but because I'm continuing to struggle through it and pray through it. So
yeah. Well, and you should, I mean, mention too, Amy's in management. And so, you know, she did allude to managed care. And so that brings in staffing, it brings in issues, it brings in partners and people that they work with. And so everyone wants a piece of your time, for sure.
Yes, and everything wants to be number one in terms of priority in the inbox. And
yeah.
I had someone who told me it all should be number one priority a while ago.
Oh, excellent.
That's a little impossible. Wow. I do realize that.
That's impossible.
No, I think for me, my jobs are school, I work at Chick-fil-A, and I volunteer at our church. And the thing about working at like a fast food restaurant, and I guess Chick-fil-A in particular, is we're always busy. And there's this need to just for me, because
I'm always open except Sunday.
Exactly.
But seriously, it's like, when aren't you gonna work, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, as a type A person, I'm always wanting to be there on time. I get there like 30 minutes early before my shift, and you know, usually you know, after I ask the manager, can I clock off, they're like, no, can you stay 20 minutes? I'm like, good grief. You know, I had plans. And you know, I just started thinking yesterday, I don't need to tell them, yeah, I can stay. I can tell them, No, but there's this drive that I want to look good for Chick-fil-A because I want to be a manager or something one day. And, you know, I just have to keep up this facade of I can always be there, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And I thought 5 years ago that I'm going to come from a different perspective, that I would be in full-time ministry, which I am now. But I thought it would look different and focus in on just one part of the ministry. And right now I have three different jobs within that ministry, and it just consumes everything. And as much as I love it, I didn't expect, like, you have to wear all these different hats in order to grow to, like, what, you know, the department or the area you want to serve in.
Yeah. Well, and okay, doesn't ministry just add a different dimension? Because it's like, oh no, you're in ministry, so that needs to be this holistic. I mean, your whole life has to be given to that. Mm-hmm. There's kind of that, you know, weight of, you're doing this for Jesus, Perla, so you better just put in the time, you know?
Yep.
It's kind of like that added guilt of, rah!
Yep. But,
you know, it really is becoming me or whatever. What have been your biggest frustrations related to not only the time investment in general, but your reaction to it? I mean, do you ever, like Dak said, find yourself kicking yourself? Why am I giving up that extra time? Why am I saying that? Why? What kind of, like, little idols has it uncovered in your own life?
I think for me, it's been this idol of success, that I want to be extremely good at whatever I do. So in school, you know, I'll like during my first semester of college, which was just last semester, one of my classes started at 11:30. I'd leave at 10 for my classes because I wanted to, you know, get there, work on my homework, get in the math center, you know, do all these things. And I realized,
unlike me, when my classes started at 11:30, I usually left around 11:45. But yeah, okay. And that's, so obviously this is your struggle, Dax, but continue.
I kind of realized that, wow, I'm missing out on getting to spend some time with my sisters, with my mom and dad. You know, I fell behind on devotions because I'm like, oh, I could have been working on that in the morning, you know? And so, you know, most students I would experience, they were like, you know, lazy. They were the opposite end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I didn't struggle with that. I struggled with being way too focused on it, you know?
You know, I think for me, one of the things I struggle with is just wanting everything to be perfect. And I can be idealistic, and I want my team to be consistent. And when somebody leaves, I'm like, oh, I have another opening to fill. I got to start at square one. And that's just reality. And the logical side of me knows that. But I have this idea in my head that I can make things perfect. So this perfectionist part of me, I've had to really learn to walk out and leave my desk messy. I actually had feedback this week from a boss who's known me for a long time, who told me, you know, Amy, some things are just pass fail. And you need to learn how to pass. You don't need to get a 98% on everything. So unfortunately, that was a little too close to home. But that's one of the things that I have to work on.
Wow. Yeah.
Is really trusting God that, you know, to direct how things are going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. For me, I would also say the perfectionist part, especially in a ministry, and being like, I'm doing this for God or whatever it is, you know, I'm doing this all for His glory. And I've just realized, like, God asks us to rest, to take a break. Like, the project will still be there. Like, God is still being glorified in what we're doing. But I would say that has been the biggest thing in the last year and a half, is just learning how to do the best that I can in the time that I have, and then just be like, all right, Lord, I'm leaving it to you, and I'm walking away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would really agree with that. You know, I am in a secular environment, but I get that lovely part of, well, people know I'm a believer, so this is also my witness. Mm. So it's that pressure of, okay, it needs to be really good. I need to make sure I get all these things done. And, you know, the reality is my company will take as much of my time as I'll give. Mm-hmm. I've always been that responsible one. So, Dax, I'm hearing you talk and going, yeah, I remember that. And it seems like if you've already got those traits, then you're going to get into a position which requires you to have them. So that whole walking out and being able to leave my laptop there on the weekend is a huge deal for me, especially in the culture that I'm in. I mean, when I first came onto the management team, people would say, well, I'm going on vacation, but, you know, you have my cell phone, I have my iPhone, I can respond to emails. And, you know, when I tried to set some limits and say, okay, I'm going on vacation and I'm not taking my phone, that you felt guilty in our environment to do that because everyone's constantly available with their electronics these days.
So what would you guys say with your work schedules, and whether it's just a lot of hours putting in or weird hours or just what kind of happens with that, what has fallen by the wayside that frustrates you? Like, what have you had to give up that you feel like now your life maybe is a little out of whack, it's out of balance? Like, what's the first thing to go when this comes about?
I would say definitely trying to keep up any kind of fitness routine is hard, because I really have to admit that the only time I can do it is before I get to work. Because once I get there and things are sucking me in, there's one thing after another going on, then I just really struggle to get any of that done. That's one of the big things for me.
Yeah.
I'd say for me, getting proper time. Like, I help lead a D group of seventh grade boys at church, and getting outside time with them is just really hard, because of the way I have it set up. I go to school Monday through Thursday. I work Thursday evenings, Fridays and Saturdays. That's how I get my hours in, because that's that, you know, it just works out that way. But when those boys have time is on the weekends, because they're in school Monday through Friday. So it's very hard for me to get time with them, spend good time with family, and just rest and do homework. You know, it. So I feel like my priorities with them and with God get kind of out of whack with that.
I would say for me, it's definitely been community, like authentic community. I working, you know, outreaches or working the evenings or whatever it is, like, I'm missing the small group, or I'm missing just those deep friendships and relationships that we need in order to support us to, like, continue on in our journey.
Yeah.
And so that has been the first thing.
Well, because, like, I mean, I would imagine, Perla, that everything you're doing so much giving. When it's ministry, you're pouring into other people, you're supporting other people, and so it is, how are you finding time to get fed when it's not something where it's like, I'm doing this because of my job, or I'm doing this. I could see where that would be tricky. Yes. So what have you done? What's been your solution?
Well, I will say within the last 6 months, there's two things. One, I started reading a book called The Rest of God, and it talks about Sabbath and how much, whether we're in school, in work, whatever it is, we need to make time to take one day, no matter what, one day a week, and rest in the way that the Lord has created us. And not, I think I got trapped into comparing myself with somebody else and like, oh, they just sleep all day. Like, that's what I need. That's not how I rest. Like, I need to take a walk, and I need a little bit of sleep, and I like to cook. So, but finding my day of rest, and then with that, incorporating some community within that. And that's really what began the journey. And then I've slowly developed those relationships through that, taking that one day and just getting perspective and like, okay, what can I clear to actually make this happen?
That's good. I mean, I know as I think of, you know, scheduling things, and I think here at Focus on the Family, I'm kind of in that ministry trap as well, and have started doing a little more travel for my job as well. So I feel like I'm always in that situation where it's like, well, after I'm back from this trip, or after I finish this project, it's always something good is going to happen, or something, some discipline is going to start after I do this, after I do that. And then it's like just the next thing comes that I have to wait until after that, after that. And so it is weird when your day and your schedule is so chopped up. It's hard to, I mean, and who has jobs anymore where you literally just are punching a clock and you're in and out the same time every day? I don't know of people. Well, yours isn't, Dex, because you've got school. Anytime that you're not at work or school, you should be doing homework. You could easily have that pressure of like, here's another thing I have to do. So, I mean, I think that's hard to figure out. But so do you guys have, I mean, Perla for rest, I mean, Amy for getting, what structures of accountability have you set up to make sure that, Dax, you're fitting in your family and you're making them a priority? I mean, or do you not have those yet and you need them? I mean, how are you guys looking ahead to what needs to change?
I've had to set up some proper boundaries with like being in discipleship of junior hires. They get very attached. So I do not
bless their heart.
They do, and it's great, but I do not accept like FaceTime calls from kids. That's not something I'll do. You know, texting has its place for school and work. You know, if I'm doing well in a class and I have a test you know, in the next week or the next day, and I already know it, I'm not going to spend the night studying for it. I'm going to spend the night watching a movie with my sisters, you know, something like that, because I know I'm taken care of. I'm good. You don't need to freak out about it. Spend some quality time with them, you know. So something my sister Maggie and I have done over the past 2 years is we watch TV shows together. We watch Monk or Psych together, you know, and it's a special time for us, you know.
No, that's good.
Yeah, I think really having to be intentional about things. And I would say I'm not really there exactly with the whole working out thing. I have friends who will ask me. Some of them are in this room, which is good. You know, friends who know the things you're trying to fit in. And I think, you know, in terms of the community thing, too, I've really had to be intentional with that. And I think I remember back to a conference I went to probably in my early 30s where the speaker was really talking about, as you get into your career, you're going to start getting pulled by different things. And you need to be intentional about, hey, we're going to get together at a certain day or time, so that you have that built into your schedule. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I think we lose track.
Well, I know it's so interesting because Amy and I are in a Bible study together, and it's one of those things where you have to sign, it's like you almost have to make yourself sign up for this Bible study, so you're expected to be mm-hmm. there, and that gets you out the door from
helps.
Work. It makes sure that you're showing up. If you're not there, people wonder where you are, and so you have to be like, where were you? Oh, I was working mm-hmm. late. No, that's not okay. So yeah, there is a little inherent accountability in that, I would mm-hmm. say.
Yeah, I agree with both what Amy and Dex said. And with that, I would just say that at the beginning of each week, I really look at my week and I take some time, whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, I only have 30 minutes or an hour, and take some perspective and just like, all right, Lord, where can I make time? What am I missing this week? Where am I off balance? And then I fit that in. I make it a priority and then set up those boundaries as well, like you said, with a Bible study or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. But I would say the one thing that has shifted everything other than that Sabbath day is like mm-hmm. at the beginning of the week, looking at my schedule and really saying, where do I have some margin and what do I need to fill that with? Is it just with God or is it with people? Like, what do I need this week?
Right.
That's very helpful. Actually, I'm going to take that away from today, Perla, and start doing that because I'm an extrovert, so I can tend to just get pulled from one thing to the next, and that cycle gets really crazy with the schedule, and so I'm not as good at like taking that time to just step back and look at things and say, okay, this is what I need to be doing.
Yeah. So. I think it's interesting, too, because actually this conversation is born out of an email that we got from a listener who said, I'm really struggling because I've got, you know, it's a job situation where there are different hours and different, you know, overnights and stuff like that. And it's like, if you're sleeping when people are awake, that's difficult to get together with them. You'll just mm-hmm. sit by their bedside. But, you know, it's hard. But I think, yeah, exactly. I mean, I like that idea of looking ahead at your schedule and figuring out what that looks like. What also would you say as far as, you know, as you look at priorities, as you figure out, okay, ideally, if I were looking a year from now at what I'm going to do with my life, I mean, because we should craft our lives for what is going to mm-hmm. maximize our health, our ministry, our effectiveness, yeah. our, you know, ultimately we're to glorify God. And if we're not making good choices, then, you know, we're not going to hit that. What would you guys say? I mean, if you were to tweak anything, and it sounds like as Perla was giving examples, she's kind of already starting to do some of that. What are some things that you could easily see that you would incorporate that would allow you to look a year from now and say, wow, this is so much better where I am right now than where I was?
I think if I organized my time better, like my homework time, then I could actually work during the week, and then I would have my weekends would be more free to work with those boys, mm-hmm. To meet with them, because ideally, my family's moving to Mississippi, and a big reason I'm staying here is one big reason is our church and the work that we're doing there. Well, in, you know, a year, 2 years, I want to be in, you know, invested in ministry there, work, you know, eventually working with the senior hires and, you know, when I get out of college, maybe college kids, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So, but I can't do that unless I organize my time mm-hmm. better, mm-hmm. you know.
Wow.
I think for me, one of the things I've been working on is just learning how to delegate. Mm-hmm. And I've been very lucky in that the company that I work with has listened to me, and I now have somebody who's under me who I'm trying to pour everything I know into her mm-hmm. and say, okay, I'm not the only one that knows how to do this in the office. And
yeah.
so that's actually making
yeah,
things
better.
Yeah, that
curse of being indispensable.
That curse of being
good.
Indispensable, yeah, it is not a good thing. So that's been really helpful, I think, already. Mm-hmm. But I think being consistent in the Sabbath, making sure that I'm not, I can get really like, oh, well, it's restful for me to take care of my house. Because, you know, that is another thing that goes is everybody else gets my time and attention, even the community, friends, whatever. And then my house is so I have to do laundry at some point. I do have to sit down and organize my life. And so, you know, having the ability to do that, you know, mm-hmm. and taking Sunday to rest, though, and not to catch up on chores.
Mm-hmm.
Guilty of doing that. So.
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, just like we've said it along, I think looking a year from now, I would like to look back and say, okay, I've actually looked at my days, my months, even going into, you know, the summer, looking at the next, like, the summer can fill up really quick. Like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, it's gone. Mm-hmm. But looking at that and saying, all right, here are the things that I'm already doing. Like, where can I fit in that fun time or whatever it is? And I would like to look back, you know, next December and look back on the summer and say, all right, I did some great things over the summer, but, like, do I feel like I accomplished? Do I feel rested? You know, whatever it is. So I think it's really, for me, just continuing that perspective and not just a week ahead of time, but that can go into a month mm-hmm. or your 3 months or your school semester or whatever it may look like.
So. Yeah. And I think that's so true. I mean, it is, it's so cliche, but learning to say no. I mean, I have mm-hmm. had to learn to say no to some things. I've had to learn to say no to very good things, and mm-hmm. it's hard. And I have to be like, you know what? There are, kind of like what Amy says about delegating, there are other people that can do these good things. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be the one that does everything. I'm not the most amazing whatever in this ministry or in doing, you know, there are other people that would be blessed by serving in this role or would be good, you know, even in the work environment that would grow and develop leadership potential by doing this instead of me doing it. And so mm-hmm. that saying no is hard because, as Perla said, you're going to lose a big season or you're going to lose a chunk of time because you were so busy, like, treadmill, mm-hmm. doing these little things. And you're like, I didn't need to do that. I could have focused on better things that would have been more important to me and mm-hmm. what I could do.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd like to look back. I mean, I've been a church plant, as you know, Lisa and I are mm-hmm. at the same church, and it's really challenging us to reach out to unbelievers and to really be available to mm-hmm. be friends with them. And where am I going to have contact with them when all I do is live at work mm-hmm. and then I go to church? Yeah. So trying to build in that margin so that I can intentionally put something else there as an avenue just to meet other people.
Right, right. Know, so. Well, and you have the opportunity to meet them at work, mm-hmm. but if you're so, like, just scrolling through your emails and not even relating to the people you work with, then that's hard too, you know, because mm-hmm. again, the tasks can so overwhelm us. So, well, cool, you guys, this has been a great discussion, and I want to thank you for being honest and vulnerable in that. Those of you who are out there, I know many of you struggle with the same thing, whether you just work weird hours, or maybe you work three jobs, or maybe you just have a job that has literally taken over your life and you don't know how that happened. You woke up one day and you're like, why is this my identity, people? I don't know. Why is the only thing ever anyone asks me about is my work?
There
like,
is more
do
to
I
us.
Not? Yeah, exactly. There's more to my life than this. So that's very, very important. But do weigh in on the blog. We want to hear from you as to what your struggles are or what maybe some ways that you've kind of conquered this as well. I think it would be helpful for us to learn from each other in that. So that would be very encouraging to see. So thank you guys so much for being part of this conversation.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, Lisa.
I met a woman down the street at the park when my kids play. Living underneath the trees because it's pretty hard to find a job these days. We talked about the ups and downs of her life as the tears filled her eyes. She smiled and said something I will never forget. That an
Well, hey, everyone, for this week's culture segment, I am very privileged to have Brad Lominick on the phone. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I am doing pretty well. I'm very excited about spring because we've had snow here up until, I don't know, a couple days ago. So not that that's your problem in Atlanta.
Last time we talked, I was actually in the studio with you.
I know. That was fun. You and Ken Coleman.
You got it. That was... Seems like yesterday, but it was probably two years ago.
It was something like 25 years ago, I think. I don't know. somewhere between 2 and 25. I can't quite
there
pin it down. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Well, a lot has happened since then. It seems like Catalyst and Brad, those of you, most of you know, either through following Catalyst or following Brad on Twitter and all the many things that he does. He has his fingers in all kinds of different pots. He is the president of Catalyst. Actually, president and key visionary. I've never heard that actual title before, but maybe did you just make that up?
That's, I did, actually. Yes.
That's good.
I was hoping that it would be one of those things that people would go, oh, okay, what does that mean?
That's the hallmark of a good leader right there is just make up your own job title and own it. That's what I say.
Absolutely.
That's good.
Absolutely.
So, well, awesome. Anyway, he leads Catalyst, basically, folks, which, as many of you know, has trained actually millions of leaders through their podcasts, through their e-newsletter, the different products they have, as well as the huge conferences that they do each year. And I think over 200,000 people have now attended those, correct, since about 2000?
Yeah, we're getting close to that number. We may be over it by now. So.
Yeah, that's a lot. So, and I've had the privilege of going to Catalyst myself. And so a lot of great, I mean, it's really like you sit in one room for a couple of days and listen to some of the best leaders that are out there and people that just have a vision, not only for what God's doing in their own life, but for the church and especially for this younger generation. So they are talking to you all people out there. So, and of course, Boundless is right in the center of that audience. So we're going to talk to Brad today because as a result of leading Catalyst and the many other things that he's done, he knows a little bit about leadership and has written about it in his book, which is brand new. It's available now. It's called The Catalyst Leader, 8 Essentials for Becoming a Change Maker. And I love how when you talk about the book, Brad, you say that these are 8 essentials. They're not like you can pick and choose a few of them like, oh, I'm just going to work on these and the rest don't matter. You're saying you got to have them all or you have none of them, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's like the the scorecard of that when you get your grades in school, and if you had 3 or 4 A's and then an F, that it really wasn't a great score. So, yeah. I feel like that these 8 are they're not the only 8. I mean, there's other essentials that folks could pick and choose and say, well, this is more important. Or what we try to do is create 8 that encompassed as much of what we feel like are the characteristics and keys to leadership and to influence that we could and distill them into those 8. So,
yeah,
if folks have got to live out all 8 of these, and we really believe, I believe that if you are, then you're on your way to being a great leader. And so it's really important that all 8 of them are seen as equal, not number 1 being the most important and number 8 being the least.
Right. Okay, that's kind of daunting because we just want to be graded on the curve. But we're going to go ahead. You're going to cast a vision for why this is necessary. So that's good. And I want to start out by asking you, from what you have seen and heard, because you have been involved with young adults for a long time now with Leading Catalyst, and you've done a number of different things, and you've basically, you have all these people, like amazing minds in your sphere and access to them. I want to know, from what you have seen and heard, how do today's young adults view leadership, basically, whether their own or in general, and is it even accurate? What does it look like when you talk to young adults today about leadership? What do they have in their minds, would you say?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, I don't think the word leadership is actually potent anymore or powerful.
Yeah.
It still means something. It still has a connotation, but I feel like that the word leadership is, it's got a little bit of an edge to it and almost a little bit of a cynicism to it because so many of us have grown up and we've seen, especially the leaders in their 20s, we've seen leaders around us who have not led well. Mm-hmm. And so that part of the reason we use the term change maker in the subtitle, 8 Essentials for Becoming a Change Maker, is that we feel like that change maker is a better word for leader, and it's a better word to describe leadership and even the idea of influence and what does it look like to have influence. And, a catalyst is also what we would describe as a leader in the sense that, like, what a catalyst does is they make things happen, they create change, mm-hmm. they spark some kind of happening, but they don't necessarily leave residue of themselves. It's not about them. It's not about all the attention being on the person that came in and actually created the change. So that's one thing is I think the term leadership is is needing a little bit of a facelift. The other thing is that 20-somethings are dealing with a couple of realities. And one is that calling is something that's a little bit more complicated nowadays, because what calling used to feel like, right or wrong, to our parents was one career, and you stayed in something for 40 years, whether you liked it or not.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. You just said, okay, I'm going to gut it out. This is a means to an end. I've got to make a paycheck so I can go do all the other things that I really love. 20-somethings now are dealing with vocational assignments. They're dealing with projects. They're dealing with seasons of a career. So a 20-something today might have 10 or 15 different assignments during the course of 40 years of vocational life. Well, that's causing some confusion among 20-somethings of what am I supposed to do with my life, you know, mm-hmm. and what's that 30,000-foot level true calling that is unique to me in the way God has wired me and where my greatest talents and my deepest passions intersect. And so we're having to deal with that, along with a new understanding that a lot of 20-somethings are being put into positions of influence, responsibility, leadership, power, whatever, before they're ready. And yeah. So the reason I wrote the book really is because I see that happening. I see so many of my peers and so many younger leaders who are passionate. They want to change the world. They're ready to go make a difference, but they're just not ready yet. Like they haven't been equipped well. And so part of the reason for the book is to try to provide a roadmap, a guide, you know, lessons I've learned along the way. I'm 40, just turned 40. So I'm in some ways a translator, you know, between generations. And really, that's the goal, is that we want to see the next generation not just lead now, because they already are, but actually lead well.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, one of my favorite sessions from Catalyst in the past was just a couple years ago. I think it was Craig Groeschel who talked about this idea that we haven't honored those who have gone before us. That idea of, you know, we've got a bunch of young 20-somethings. I mean, and I think there are those out there that legitimately have a passion. I mean, what Bill Hybels calls a holy discontent. There's something where they want to make change. But there's also that, you know, sector that's like, you know, by the time I'm 23, I'm going to be on stage at Catalyst, and I'm going to be in my skinny jeans leading worship, or I'm going to be have written a book, and kind of this false understanding of, okay, what actually is God, quote, calling me to do. So I think that's a little bit problematic. And I know that you say in the book, you talk about discovering God's unique calling on your life, and you say we need to do that. But how do we, first of all, not even just be totally paralyzed by that, because we can put this thing on it where it's like, if you don't have your calling, then what you're doing is totally irrelevant. And then how do we not overinflate it? And maybe you could use your own example of how you discovered yours in explaining that.
Yeah, well, I think for most of us, our calling is a step away from where we might be now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a mile away. It's not hundreds of miles away. It's right next to us. Unfortunately, many of us just haven't stepped into it yet. And it typically shows up in our life regardless of whether we want it to or not, because we end up doing things, whether it's with our job or with the vocation, or it's outside of that time of our, you know, of the day, we end up doing things that we're passionate about. And so many of us are already really close to it. It's right next to us. We just haven't truly embraced it and put words around it and actually, you know, created a sense that, okay, this is what I've been wired to do. And, you know, especially 20-somethings, you get out of school and you're one of your biggest things is maybe paying off school loans or just finding a job. Like at mm-hmm. the end of the day, it's like, okay, I just need to find a job. And the calling question seems like something so big and so mysterious. But that's why I recommend that in your 20s, figure out what it is. You know, you want to do that way earlier than you think you should. Even if it doesn't lead you somewhere, go ahead and start to define a calling statement, a sense of your purpose statement in life, a sense of, you know, if I could do anything, this is what I would love to do. And if I wasn't getting paid for something, this is what I would love to do. And what are the things from my childhood that really, when I think about it, I was always drawn to or wired to do? And so for me personally, I spent 5 years working on a dude ranch in Colorado after college. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was going and what I considered to be pursuing their calling and, you know, getting a great job and climbing the ladder and going to law school and you know, what fill in the blank. And I was working on a guest ranch, a dude ranch, Western ranch in Colorado, making zero money, literally, and wearing Wranglers and boots and scooping manure. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was sort of my job.
Just the Wranglers themselves are problematic, but go ahead.
Oh, listen, I wore those Wranglers with pride, with great pride.
Did you have a skull can in the back pocket or no?
I did not have a skull can because we were a family ranch.
Oh, gotcha.
So
okay.
We chose not to to spit in front of the kids. Yeah. But it was like this moment in life where I thought, okay, what is going on here? Like, God, what are you saying to me? And what I learned through that now, 15 years later, is that my calling was being revealed to me. And part of my calling was to create environments, you know, to actually create environments where people come and they're recharged, they're refreshed, they're inspired, they're challenged. And so for that season, it was creating an environment at a ranch where families and guests would come and have a great Western vacation. Mm-hmm. Now what I get to do with Callus is I create environments for leaders to come and be inspired and equipped. You know, but that idea of hospitality, of inviting somebody into my home, of creating a platform, you know, that the experience side of all that, that was all like from a 30,000 foot level view, made perfect sense. And so I just encourage younger leaders to not get so wound up with the wonkiness of calling. You know, like, it's not that mysterious. The church, unfortunately, we've made it to feel like it's something that is unreachable unless you're a pastor, mm-hmm. or unless you're in full-time ministry. And so for those of us who aren't, we kind of go, well, do I really have a calling? Like, you know, is my calling just to love Jesus and to make him more known? Yes, it is. But I believe God gives us a very unique, specific calling for a vocation that we are uniquely wired to do. And, you know, it's not usually that hard for us to figure out, although we tend to make it.
Yeah. Well, so give some encouragement for that young adult that's thinking, you know, maybe they're familiar with Catalyst and they're like, okay, well, I definitely feel passionate about this. And you talk about passion as one of the essentials.
Yeah.
I feel passionate about this, but I've been to Catalyst and I'm no Louis Giglio. I'm no Francis Chan. I'm no Andy Stanley. I'm an introvert and I don't even like talking to people and I'm an accountant. Okay.
Yeah.
So what does leadership look like for them? Because I think they could easily say, I just don't, quote, have the personality for that. And I don't know what to do. And you're obviously saying, you know, look where you started. You were on a dude ranch. You know, there were things latent there that now, as you say, looking back, you know, you see. But what's your encouragement for that person that's just like, all I see are these examples of amazing people. Where are the average people?
Well, I think average people are what God uses to do extraordinary things. I mean, I truly do. Like, mm-hmm. I think that the measurement of success of a leader and of a person who's walking and truly stepping into their calling is that you achieve and you actually succeed at what you've been wired and called to do. So for some of us, that means it's to be a great mom. It's to be a great accountant. It's to be the best in the world at being a designer. And it's to be the you know, the world's greatest English teacher, eighth grade English teacher. You know, and those are the things I feel like that people always look at and they go, well, if I'm not in front of thousands, or if I'm not writing best-selling books, or if I'm not speaking to millions, or if I'm not starting something that scales to a global vision, I'm not really accomplishing anything. And I think just the opposite. Like, you know, the faithful steward is the one who is accomplishing much, mm-hmm. and to whom much is given, much is required, but also to whom a little is given, much is required. And so I think the kingdom of God, like the measuring tools, we've got them all messed up. Mm-hmm. And it might be an inverted system. I don't know that, but I just feel like that for those of us who are in the place where we've been called to make a difference, our job is to make a difference. And, you know, whatever that is, it doesn't matter if it's big or small, do that well. Do it better than anyone else. Be the best in the world at doing that. And it doesn't mean you got to stand up and speak, and it doesn't mean you have to be this extrovert who's out there, you know, again, on the platform. Because most of us are never going to be on a platform. We're never going to do any of those things. And that's the hard part always at a conference, you know, especially at Catalyst or someplace like that. You hear from people who are really good at communicating, and they stand up and they inspire you, and then you think, well, I'm never going to be that. Mm-hmm. the message they want you, I think all of us and all the speakers and presenters, is go back into your context, into your oikos, into your place of influence, wherever you live, your community, your neighborhood, your job, your organization, and go be great at being a leader in that context. You know, it doesn't mean you have to go start something else that says it's going to be big one day.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a catalyst in the future. Is a catalyst where the speakers are an 8th grade English teacher and an auto tech, and that could be kind of interesting. How,
you know what? I love that idea. The hard part about that one is that I don't know who would show up.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. No, that's what you need to tell these young adults. Hey, stop being all like, you know, all about the names. Well, I mean, I guess how do you convince people of that? I don't know. You know what? I will start right here, Brad. I'm going to tell our audience to go to that catalyst. I'm just going to bust a cap on them right now and be like, look, people, do it. Okay? Because there's stuff to be learned from that. That's why I'm like, hey, we put all kinds of people on this show. That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
You know, we're talking about people who are faithful in the very little things. I think that comes to one of the other things you talk about in the book, which is authenticity. A little bit of what we've been talking about here, and not just jumping on the latest bandwagon of, you know, I talked to 20-somethings who are like, okay, I guess what I need to get excited about now is, and really passionate about, is sex trafficking, because that's what everyone's talking about, or orphan care, or, you know, and then all of a sudden they're like Googling, trying to like research it and stuff. And not that that's not important. They're very important causes and people are doing good work in that. But being authentic to what you're good at, first of all, what you're passionate about, and what God is calling you to. And I like what you said about just right where you are, what is one step away from where you are. I think that is so important. And I kind of want to turn a corner in talking specifically then about you in light of this, because I know you say in the book, you kind of near the end of the book say that your joy really is the friendships that you have built with all these people that you've had the chance to work with, whether partners, vendors, fellow leaders. And you are kind of, I mean, even though you're big stuff and you've got that title, you know, you kind of are that a little bit behind the scenes guy who has to wrangle all this stuff together. Do you yourself, Brad, like write life plans, or as you look to the next 5 to 10 years, what is God putting on your heart in particular? What does it look like for you?
Well, thanks for saying that. I'm definitely the guy that's more comfortable behind the scenes. You know, that's where my sweet spot is. I'm a platformer and an aggregator and a convener. I'm not a communicator. I'm very comfortable with being the person who is beside the stage and not on it. Given all that, I think for me, the stewardship is always the question. And for any leader, I think that's the question, is what am I being given to steward right now? And for me in this season, it's a lot of relationships. It's a lot of friendships that I mean, when I say that in the last chapter of the book, I really do mean it, that the friendships that I've gained from this experience of leading Catalyst for the last 10 to 12 years are priceless. And that's the part for me that I see as a really hopeful vision for the future, is that I get to sort of, you know, for some reason, I don't know why, because I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm just an Oklahoma boy that ended up in the right seat, but I get to steward a lot of these friendships and watch a lot of things happen and connect people to see good come out of it. And it's everything from, you know, the speakers we have, to the attendees at our events, to organizations that we get to partner with, to denominations that we invite to be a part of Catalyst, and all the different people out there who now see Catalyst as this place that they can attend and be a part of, and it's a safe environment. Mm-hmm. That's another really important stewardship for me, is that we can be this movement, I guess you could say. I don't like using that word, but you know, because I think movements are God designed and not man designed. But if we could say we are a movement, and that Catalyst is doing something that is bringing leaders together for purposes beyond themselves, that's what our hope is. And so that's what I'm trying to do with stewardship of Catalyst, is to create those environments where people can connect and we can see a lot of things happen. And you know, social justice is part of that, and highlighting organizations that are doing great work. And but the key on this, again, Lisa, I know you know this and you believe this, but I think it's so important for leaders to understand, is that we have to quit trying to be the fake versions of ourselves. Like we put so much emphasis and stock on when I get to this next phase and I'm more like so-and-so, then I'll have arrived. And I think what we need is that we need that authenticity revolution within our generation that says, it's okay for me to be me, and I've got to be me. I've got to lead from who I am. I've got to be content with the way I've been wired and the way God's made me, and that everyone else wants that from me. And so many of us, because of social media, we're living these false versions of ourselves, and we're trying to prop ourselves up and make ourselves sound better. And we got to stop. The currency within our culture right now that I think is trading the most are two things: generosity and authenticity. Mm-hmm. And generosity is the collaborative side, you know, of if I'm doing something for someone else, then that actually gives me more influence. And the authenticity side is that it used to be that you weren't found out until somebody discovered something you were doing. So the only way you were really found out was if somebody uncovered your secrets. And I think now leaders have to actually lean in and say, not only am I going to uncover my secrets, but I'm going to tell you about them. And I'm going to be real, and I'm going to be vulnerable, and I'm going to talk about my weaknesses. And teams and staffs will actually want to follow you more if you do that.
Yeah.
They will lean in and go, you know what? I don't care if you know it all. I just love the fact that you're real with me. So that's a new currency that's trading that I think is a huge leadership paradigm shift of the last 20 years.
Yeah, well, I think we have so lost that idea of what it means to really listen to God and to be honest in our assessment of what he's asking us to do. And actually, that's a lesson I learned at Catalyst a couple of years ago. I was walking through the arena and passing by all the booths, and we had a booth there. And it was like within my first day there, all of a sudden I had people talking to me, and it was like, okay, well, you need to meet so-and-so, and you need to meet this person, and you need to have them on the show. And is this person following you on Twitter? And have they retweeted your tweets? And I'm just like, oh my word, like what, where is my real life? And what in the world does that have to do with all this other, you know, my social media life / persona? And it was just a reminder to me about all the stuff that I'm doing, you know. And I started out in journalism and transitioned to PR, and now I'm doing Boundless and hosting this podcast, and who knows how I even got here, quite frankly, you know. I mean, and it's, I realized that it, for me, it's been about, and I have to return to this, about walking through the doors that God has opened and looking on either side of me, and who can I build up in the work that they're doing as well. And that's why I love, like you said, through Catalyst, I love showcasing people on the show and just saying, you know, here is a great thing to get on board with. Here is, those of you who are passionate about this, listen up. This is how this person did it, or this is where they're calling you to come alongside of them. And but this whole, like you said, this fake existence of, you know, who we think we are on Facebook and how that translates into who we really are, it's just nuts. But looking around and just saying, you know, who's God calling me to be present with right now? And how's he calling me to live out my life and my calling and my faith right where I am, being faithful in the little things? I think that's so, mm-hmm. so important. Question for you about life balance then, in light of that. You are a single guy. I mean, here you are doing all this stuff, and I know you've joked about this with Don Miller and whatever, you know. Okay, yeah. Don. Hey, Don. but what, I mean, do you want to be married, or what do you have, you know, looking holistically at other areas of your life, what do you see happening there?
I do want to be married, and I'm not sure why I haven't yet in life.
Well, it's because you're in that small town of Atlanta. You can't find anyone there.
I know. That's there's why. Just not anybody here. There's nothing going on in the city of Atlanta.
I know.
So sad. I think I have a little bit of a commitment issue. So okay. I'm revealing stuff to you, Lisa, on this. I feel like you're Oprah right now. I'm opening up.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna press until I hear tears. So you just keep going.
I'm crying. I'm crying.
Okay.
I'm crying.
I hear that angst in your voice. Okay.
Yeah. So no, I definitely want to be married, and just I feel like that for some reason. I don't know why I'm not, to be honest with you, but the stage of life I'm in and the things I've gotten to do the last 10 to 15 years mm-hmm. have really been fun. And I know that with a wife, it would have been more fun, but I also don't in any way look at the last 10, 15 years and say, oh, I wish I, you know, I wish it would have been different, because I'm, man, I'm so content with the life that I've got to lead so far and the incredible opportunities I've had. And so I'm in that space of, yes, wanting to, but also knowing that at the end of the day, if it doesn't happen, then, you know, life is still great. And I'm very content with where I am and who I am and what I'm doing. But if there's any, you know, single listeners out there that are interested, I don't know, like, can we make an eHarmony right here on the spot? What's going on?
Yeah, you totally can. They're going to find you on Twitter. They'll find you. It's going to be like, we're going to start our reality show right here. Yeah, it's going to be.
I could create B-Harmony, and it would be an offshoot of eHarmony, and it would be, you know, B representing Brad, eHarmony.
Or, you know, like a reality show. The only problem is, like, as Christians, it's like we just have to go bowling or to Bible studies. You can't
no question.
It's not going to be like super, you know, no one could be sitting in hot tubs and that kind of stuff. So I don't know if that makes for good TV or not. But
yeah, if we do go to a bar, we're only drinking O'Doul's, right?
That is so true. So true. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to put a shout out. I mean, I'm okay with that. We don't want you to be the weird or the bitter single guy. So that's okay.
Oh, I'm not.
Yeah. No, that's okay. And I always say that to people too. I'm like, you know, I'm not God. I have to believe that God has my story. I have to believe that He has my back. And so, but at the same time, whoever is in your life as a mentor, we need them to deal with your commitment issue and to get up in your business and to help you along the way. So all of the people that you're going to send this link to, I want them to do that for you. Okay.
Well, they will. I promise you they will. And they already have.
Okay. That's good.
I have several male and female friends who have basically, they have made the prediction that if I'm not, you know, pursuing a significant relationship or in one within the next couple of months, that they may cause bodily harm to me. So,
okay. Yeah. That's good. They're just going to, I mean, frankly, you just need to start being set up. You need to get your numbers up apparently and then deal
with
that.
That's true. Like,
I know. Okay.
I'm with you.
We're going to work on that. Last question. I want to know, from whom have you learned the most about leadership yourself personally? Because you have access to all these people. And so you better be learning some good things. And I want to know whether it's, you know, the big names or smaller people, behind the scenes people, who's out there?
It's a great question. I definitely would say Andy Stanley, because one, he's sort of synonymous with Catalyst in terms of speaking at every event. We do one day events with him now. So I've gotten to be around Andy a lot and both from watching him lead as well as hearing him speak on leadership, he would probably be the one I've learned the most from as a mentor and just somebody that I really respect. You know, the people I probably learned the most from would be my team, on our Catalyst team. And we have an environment that is very flat from a hierarchical perspective and organizationally. And we've given permission to each other on our team because we're small to really hold each other accountable and press in and be willing to say things that many times people who show up at our or that they see our context, they go, wow, you guys like really don't like each other. And you're in some ways very direct. And I've learned a lot from my team about understanding that leadership is obviously about getting people to move from here to there, but it's also about helping others around you to be and to lean into who they are. And you know, if we're creating environments and we're creating organizations that are all about us as the leader and that everything's built around you, then that's not a good model. And so anyway, I've learned a lot from watching them, and they've pushed me and they've made me a better leader myself. And so in turn, that's I've learned probably the most from them over the years.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. I mean, and it's good to know that the quote leadership guy is still learning about leadership and there's more to be learned. I think that's a good lesson for all of us. We have not arrived. We will not arrive. There's always something new. And, you know, for us to be humble and teachable in that is so, so important.
None of us ever arrive. And I mean, John Maxwell, who I worked
for. I kind of feel like he's arrived.
a lot of people would say that. And yeah. The thing I love about John is that I still see him quite often, and I see him at events, and he's a friend. And J- John is now close to 70, and every time I see him at a conference or in a gathering somewhere, if there's people speaking or if there's learning happening, he's involved in it. And he's got his notebook out, and he's writing down stuff. All the great leaders like that, I believe, they never stop learning. They never fully think that they've arrived and they've gotten it all down and they've figured it out. John Wooden was the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, the one time I met John Wooden, the legendary UCLA basketball coach, I mean, he was at an event we had, and he was 94 at the time. And what he was most interested was is who else was speaking so that he could make sure he was in the sessions to listen to them and to learn from them and to take notes. And I was just blown away by the humility with which he looked at his life and saying, hey, I'm not done. I still got a lot to learn. So that's a really good lesson especially for younger leaders.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's cool. All right. Well, Brad, thank you so much for giving us some time today. I want all y'all out there to know, a reminder that the book is The Catalyst Leader, 8 Essentials for Becoming a Change Maker. We didn't even walk through all of the essentials because, hello, people, we don't just talk about everything in a book. You got to go buy it, okay? So we will have it linked on the blog, and make sure that you are following Brad and Catalyst, especially on Facebook and Twitter. We will have those links up as well, so you can make sure you're in the fold and learning about the next event and following the podcast and doing all that. Our own Jim Daly has been present at Catalyst in the past, so we love you guys and the work that you're doing. I think it's super. So we're gonna have to maybe work on getting a little more of a boundless presence there. You know, get up in your business over there. So
absolutely, come on, we love boundless.
We will do. So yay!
The more presence, the better.
Awesome. Okay. Well, Brad, thank you again. And you need to make your next trip out here to the Dude Ranch. You need to pop by Boundless and see us in person again.
I will. We'll do a drive-by live look-in and say hi.
That would be good in Wranglers. So good.
Yeah. I've got them. They may be a little tight these days, but I've still got them in the closet.
That is wow. That's more than we need to know. So okay, that's good. Well,
thanks, Lisa.
Thanks again.
How do you deal with disaster? How do you cope with the pain? It's hard to move on when regret, like an anchor, makes you feel like you're the one to blame. Why is healing so painful? It feels like I'm losing this war, but I know you will be there as we walk through this struggle, because you've always been there before. There's a peace that's perfect, a hope that is real. There's a plan and a purpose, no matter how you feel. Just hold on to the promise that will never be undone. But when you fall like the rain, you're gonna rise like the sun.
This week's inbox, and I have Candace Waters with me. Hey, Candace.
Hi, Lisa. Great to be back with you.
Always love it when you're here to answer a question, and we have many that seem to be addressed to you. So this one's no exception because it's from a female, and she wants to know. Let me go ahead and read it for you. She says, I moved from home at the age of 25. She's 27 now, and have struggled on and off since then with separating from my family. I always thought a dad was to cover his daughter until she marries. In any case, that is not possible with me. Yet there are still needs a single woman has, like fixing things around the house or car troubles. On one hand, I don't want to become so independent that I can just do it all myself and not need a man. But on the other, I want to be a woman and not a little girl. What's your advice for me?
Well, I think it's okay to be capable. And we as women should strive to be skilled. You know, if any of us who end up married, we'll quickly find out how helpful it is to have a few skills in our pockets. But the goal should not to be, as she's identified, so independent that you can't then later become interdependent with a husband. And I think the challenge, too, is to fight against pride, the sense that, hey, I don't need a man. I can do it all by myself. I'm smart. I have a degree. I'm earning my own living. I don't need a man. There's nothing wrong with needing one another. We are designed for relationship, designed for community. And interestingly, God made woman to be a helper to a man who presumably needed a helper. So need is part of the human condition. But where does this leave her in her relationship with her dad? I think it's good to be reminded that we are called throughout our whole lives always to honor our parents and to respect them. But it's only children who in Scripture are called to obey their parents. And so your relationship with your dad will change as you move out of the house and become a mature woman. You know, I looked to my dad up until I got married in a lot of ways, I think, as a spiritual covering over me. I would call him and pray with him. I talked to him a lot of the time about big decisions I was making, but I didn't live close enough to home to even consider living at home or, you know, to have him in like a practical, everyday sort of covering or presence in my life. It's not like Steve called my dad the first time he took me out on a date to ask his permission, or we just didn't have a geographical closeness for that. It wasn't possible. But I do think it's wise as a single Christian woman living on your own to have an authority figure in your life, and whether it's your dad or your pastor, someone, a man who is looking out for your best interests, who is watching over you. You know, I think we tend to be offended by that notion because of our culture, and we think, well, I don't need a covering. Thank you very much. But I don't know many women who don't want some sort of protection in their life, who don't crave safety, who don't crave security. And I think the Lord designed our dads to be that for us. And when we don't have that, for the women who are saying, boy, I never had that, I can't relate, I think they would recognize that they've been missing something, that creates an insecurity in their heart, it creates a vacuum, it creates some sort of a need. And so as much as possible, invite your dad in spiritual ways to pray with you, to give you advice, but also look for that sort of leadership from appropriate, you know, father-like figures in your life where you are living. And also look for opportunities where you can ask for help from Christian brothers and those father figures in your church. You know, if your car breaks down, ask someone from your small group who is good with cars, say, hey, could you help me? I think we benefit from serving one another in this way as a family.
Yeah. That's very good and very applicable. And I know I've had to step back and do that myself in my life. I think I trended more towards the, oh, I just need to do everything by myself because I don't want to appear too weak or needy, and found out that guys actually really, blossom under that. They really enjoy being asked. And so I think that's a good balance, mm-hmm. a good perspective to have. So,
yeah. Well, and if we're preparing for marriage, it's practice for that. You know,
exactly.
I mean, again, I've said in past shows, don't act married with someone you're not married to, but asking a guy from your church who's like a brother to you to help you fix your car is not acting married. It's acting like your sister. And mm-hmm. we are part of the family of God. So that's an appropriate way to interrelate.
Yeah, very good thoughts. Thanks, Candace.
You're welcome.
Okay, everyone. Well, do write to us at editor@boundless.org so that we can answer your question. We receive actually quite a few questions each week, and so we like to sift through them and put them in the queue, so that's always good. And of course, do be catching up on shows if you haven't done that already. A lot of times we'll hear from someone and they'll mention a segment and we're like, whoa, that was a while ago. But people do catch up on the old ones, so that's exciting and always applicable as well. So make sure you put us on your plans, too, to visit us. I always like to say that because we like seeing our friends when you can come here in the flesh. So do make that a priority if you can get out here to Colorado. That is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.
A donor-supported ministry of Focus on the Family.